news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? Isn't that fair? Throw it away. All right? All right!
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. Downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 164, 2003's Freddy vs. Jason.
Freddy vs. Jason, a movie that is derided by some as not being a befitting climax to the respective series, Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, two series that introduce, of course, inarguably, I would say, two of the most famous slasher icons. These were the last movies in the respective series, because after this, they went the whole reboot route. And we got, this was the god-awful Nightmare remake starring Jackie Earle Haley. And so this was Robert Englund's last go-round as Freddy Krueger. And we got the Derek Mears starring reboot of Friday. Now, they will apparently, a new Friday is in development, which is, I believe, in continuity. I don't know if they're remaking, rebooting, or what have you. But this was the final movie. And then when this movie came out, in 2003, there was a lot of anticipation because this movie was foreshadowed 10 years earlier at the climax of the prior Friday the 13th movie. No, actually, wait. Jason X might have come out in the ensuing years, but it doesn't matter. Jason Goes to Hell, when, at the end of the movie, Jason is defeated and you see his iconic mask lying there, and then, in the closing shot, reaching up from the ground is an equally iconic totem, the gloved, razor blade gloved hand of Freddy Krueger, literally dragging Jason down to hell. At this point, the rights to the Friday franchise have reverted to New Line. So, New Line was putting out Friday movies, New Line was putting out Nightmare movies. They had both of these guys in the house, and they were going to do something with them, putting them together. And horror fans were chomping at the bit. They couldn't wait to see Freddy vs. Jason, a movie rumored for years and years and years to be coming out, a movie that was in development hell, many screenwriters, many cooks in the kitchen, many rewrites. Finally, director Ronnie Yu, who had previously helmed Bride of Chucky, got them together. And opening weekend, I went to the theater. I believe it was a Saturday matinee. I went by myself, sat there, and I watched this thing. And I gotta say, not a perfect movie, There's some flaws here and there, but man, was it a fun time. I enjoyed it. Now, this was your first experience with...
And I wasn't unaware that people were clamoring for this crossover collaboration, because I wasn't, or would not have been, had I known. I was not aware this was in development hell, speaking of hell, at the time. And I do not particularly... I think it's kind of stunt-like as an exercise in art, or whatever you want to call it, to just do this. It sounded kind of desperate, mm-hmm. and I was kind of, having just bought this, I was very much not looking forward to it, and I anticipated turning it off within 10 minutes to be, as anticipating it being an insult to both franchises, probably one more so than the other, and I was very entertained, because mm-hmm. what it did, I think, was take the best elements of the Nightmare franchise and showcase those, and set it in the milieu that has become so frightening for Freddy fans, and leave it, not put it in the woods of a Friday thing, although they allude to that. But I thought the atmosphere almost made this a bona fide entry in the Nightmare series. There's jump scares that usually I abhor, but were fantastic here because they're a dream, and the whole setup is a dream. So I accept them more. The flashpot, like lightning flashes, the 1428 Elm Street, the characters plagued by dreams, I can't sleep, I'm insomniac, I love that. Mm-hmm. And they didn't shoehorn in Jason. They actually did it in a neat kind of way. Mm-hmm. So kudos to them. Yeah. I was shocked that they did this. But
no, there were two things. Number one, I like that it was fairly reverential to both mythos of both characters. There was one or two things here and there, particularly with Jason, that was the kind of rub me the wrong way. And the other thing I really liked too, I mean, you got to remember, this was still when horror was reeling from the seismic aftershocks of Scream.
Yeah.
When everything was getting all self-referential and meta, and they could have totally went that route with this one, but they didn't. It respected its
predecessors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I going into this movie, I was more of I've always been more of a Jason guy, right? So when I sat down, I was in that theater, I wanted to see Jason prevail. And that's another thing that, people were wondering who's going to prevail.
Splitting the fan camps, yeah.
Who will be the final victor. And there were some moments, you were mentioning earlier when we talked about this movie, the one thing that made this movie successful was that the whole Freddy versus Jason aspect, it sort of happened organically in the sense that the conceit was wonderful, and we'll talk about that conceit briefly in a moment,
yeah.
But the whole mano a mano really only happened in the final third of the movie.
Yeah, which to its credit, and it's interesting, had the reverse been done, and let's say it's opposite, Jason versus Freddy, I don't think Freddy could have as easily invaded the Camp Crystal Lake environs as easily as the reverse. So they really played to the strength, because Jason has shown an affinity for preying on urban folk as well as rural camp goers. So I thought they really played to their strengths.
Freddy's always been your suburban boogeyman, and this was again another. He used the suburbs as his base of operations. It was kind of funny though, at one point near the end, when our protagonists take Jason's body, which at this point has been tranked into the point of, unconsciousness, from Elm Street to Crystal Lake.
Hmm.
And it makes me wonder, how close geographically are these two locales? I mean,
well, who knows? I mean, who knows where Springwood is, or who knows where Springfield is for The Simpsons? So there's a infamous crossover between The Simpsons and Family Guy, two properties that made Fox billions of dollars. And that one actually diluted and neutered both of the respective humor. I'm more of a Simpsons guy, but I appreciate the brazenness of Family Guy at times.
It's puerile.
Yeah, true, but at times it really goes through the roof and goes for the gusto, but you can't compare the two, but those two did not come together well. And having not seen Batman versus Superman, you were more kind to it than other people have been, but you have
I really liked it, man.
Yeah,
I dug it.
You have a lot of fan bases to play to, and a lot of egos to stroke, and a lot of people's needs to accommodate. And they did it with aplomb here to make sure that neither one of these slasher icons was subordinate to the other.
Well, I mean, it's the conceit is great. I mean, you have at this point both Freddy and Jason are down and out. Jason by virtue of being dead and in hell, and Freddy by sort of being in hell and dead, but Freddy, I mean, he's able to, you know, his power is invading people through dreams, and the only way he can invade people through dreams is if they're afraid of him, ergo they're going to have a nightmare. Well, the citizens of Ringwood, when I say the citizens, I mean the authority figures, the police, the parents, and again, this follows the theme yet again of that we talked about way back when in our Nightmare podcast, the very first Nightmare podcast, of authority figures thinking that they know what's right for their kids, but in actuality doing more harm than good. But what they've been doing is they've been drugging the kids with a experimental drug called Hypnosil, which suppresses any sort of dream activity. So whether some kids were institutionalized, some kids weren't, but the reality is nobody was dreaming. Because nobody was dreaming, nobody was fearing Freddy, he was forgotten, he had no power. It's interesting, because, you know, in the pantheon of theology and divinity, they say that, you know, because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of pantheistic religions, right? And a lot of these old gods, they say they stop losing power when people stop believing in them. You know, so, for example, in the last podcast you mentioned, Hecate.
Yeah.
Hecate has no more power because nobody believes in him anymore. Nobody worships Hecate. Well, it's the same thing with Freddy Krueger. If nobody fears him, then he is unable to invade people's dreams. Not that he's a god, but in many ways, Freddy Krueger does have godlike abilities. He's more, quote-unquote, supernatural than, I would say, Jason, who started off as a very grounded killer and then became more zombie-like as the series progress or regress, as other people would say.
Yeah.
But, so, Freddy comes up with this incredible idea. Searching the bowels of hell, he finds Jason Voorhees, and he resuscitates him and to send him to Elm Street to make people afraid again. And in doing so, Freddy will then be able to gain the power required to invade dreams. Wonderful. Great way to get the great table setting. Great way to get these two together.
And inhabiting Mrs. Voorhees' head as well. Really neat. Mm-hmm. And that's funny. You mentioned all the gods. It's just like Christopher Hitchens and the New Atheist would have said, there's graveyards full of gods. Gods devoted to all sorts of things. These guys are godlike in their own way. They can't...
Mr. Simpson, please do not offer my god to peanut. Here's
your peanut to you. It always comes back to the Simpsons.
Yeah.
And these two, they are godlike forces. And yet, even gods have to have... limitations, right? Because otherwise they would be boring. And Superman is a godlike figure. Even he has to have limitations. We talk about Batman versus Superman. He has kryptonite. How boring would it be to have someone with no limitations? So Freddy has his powers eroded, and he cannot actually fulfill his kills at the beginning, and he's worried by this. And yeah, I thought that was really neat that he has to enlist the help of someone to make fear possible again in Springwood. Mm-hmm. So it was great, and we're introduced to a cast of characters in this town through the infamous, now infamous, classical colonial home, white picket fence suburban house, 1428 Elm Street. Mm-hmm. And we get all these kids who are now set upon, not by the Springwood slasher, but by
Butcher of Crystal Lake.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we got Lori, played by Monica Keena, who is a Dawson's Creek alum. I guess you'd be more familiar with that, being a...
Well, I'm embarrassed to say yes. Yeah.
Although I did watch a few episodes. There was a period where I watched maybe half a season, and I remember seeing her, and I thought she was rather hot. And
that's indeed why I kept watching it. Indeed she is.
And I remember her character attempted suicide. Whether she was successful or not, I don't know.
I couldn't tell you. Yeah.
I don't know what Monica Keena has done since. She really has sort of faded into obscurity. But speaking of obscurity, you also have another character, Kia, played by ex-Destiny's Child member Kelly Rowland.
Yeah, who was cut loose from by Beyonce, much like the same way Justin Timberlake got rid of his bandmates to go solo. And she does not quite acquit herself too well. I would say she's not a survivor. I'm a survivor. We're going to get the Destiny's Child references in. Great character, though. There's something about her. I thought she was really compelling. Am I crazy? I don't know.
A little bit. I thought she was one of the weaker links. I preferred Gib, played by Catherine Isabel, a horror icon. Previously in Ginger Snaps.
American Mary. American Mary face herself. Is so unique, yeah.
Indeed.
And yeah, and these characters are all friends, and they're having a house party, as one is wont to do. They invite over some of their guys. They get amorous, and one of their guys is butchered in just spectacular fashion by Jason, showing up using his machete as he's wont to do, and in addition, closing the bed on Blake.
Oh, it was awesome.
In accordion-like fashion.
He just kabobbed him into the bed, sort of an homage to one of the kills in Friday 13th Part 2. Also, kind of homaging Nightmare on Elm Street with Glenn.
Johnny Depp's, yeah. Yeah.
Although we didn't have the geyser of blood, but still, it was multiple stabbings.
Yeah, it was amazing. Oh, man.
And then taking that bed. And there was some amazing kills in this movie. Let's talk about the rave. That was incredible, too. The field party rave.
I wanted to be there. It was great. The music was kind of off-kilter, almost Celtic electronic dance music kind of beats. And it's funny that style of music has become en vogue again, and as has the fluorescent, those tubes that everyone is flashing.
Free your mind. And, yeah.
I wanted to be there. I was so invested. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of corny...
Well, it was in a cornfield, so it was
corny. Oh, yeah, so it was corny, yeah. But a bunch of typical guys who are doing the beer,
beer bong?
Beer bong, yeah, that's it, beer bong, and subjecting the nerds to the beer bong, and then, when they encounter Jason, they mock him and say, like, listen, the rural suburban divide is underscored by one of the guys saying, like, listen, shouldn't you be out there fucking a pig or something? Because Jason is dressed like a hick, and he's standing there in a mask and looking like a farmhand. Mm-hmm. And they mock him, and he just...
And they set him aflame. Mm-hmm. And flaming Jason goes in there and massacres the shit out of this party.
Yeah, flaming effigy Jason.
Yeah, not a flaming Mo, but a flaming Jason. Great stuff, and great kills, and as Jason is killing these kids, Freddy is starting to get, he's starting to get his power. He's starting to sort of be able to invade some of the dreams, and then there's a lot, we're not getting into the whole plot of, there's some institutionalized kids, they escape, et cetera, et cetera. But, these kids that live in Springwood are trying to unravel the mystery. Why am I dreaming about this Freddy guy all of a sudden? Who's killing these people?
Oh, yeah.
But the thing that's happening is that Jason, his bloodlust is being...
Satiated, yeah.
Satiated, but maybe not to the point where it's fully satiated, because he's now taking victims that Freddy believes is his.
Yeah.
So as Freddy's starting to gain power again and being able to, invade the dreams, but not quite able to kill them, he's getting upset at this beast, this monster that he resuscitated, who is now, I guess, for lack of a better word, stealing his thunder.
Mm. And again, nods to the earlier psychosexual elements that made the initial Freddy movie so amazing, namely parts 1 and 2, and to a lesser extent, or 1 and 3, sorry, to a lesser extent,
2. 2 was good, too.
2 was fun, too, and you can listen to our podcast of that, but the relationship, the bizarre Oedipal relationship between Laurie and her dad, and that's how we're introduced to it, and the tongue, and the amazing proboscis phallic tongue, and her father kissing her on the lips. That just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is really going for the gusto, because there's nudity galore. First scene at a campground, there's a chick doffing her top, she gets killed, there's a gratuitous, some would say, I don't shower scene. There's elements
Catherine Isabel's
of just
body
going
double,
for it, mm-hmm. and I thought that was just amazing.
But ultimately, this movie's called Freddy vs. Jason, and it's going to come down to Freddy versus Jason. Place your bets, mano a mano. These two horror icons going at each other, and that was done well too. There were times when I thought the fight choreography was incredible between the two.
Sure.
It showcases strengths. You basically had brains versus brawn, in the sense that...
I was going to ask, is your preference is for...
You're
team
man.
Jason.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm team Freddy. Mm-hmm. But not so much in terms of the respective properties themselves, because one reached greater heights and lower lows, and the other was sort of a middle, I would say. One doesn't aim too high, but that's disparaging to Friday the 13th. I liken it to like a comfortable sweater, because there's, you put it on, you feel good, but it's nothing that's particularly transcendent. Mm. And parts 1 and 3 of Nightmare were so elevated. So I thought it was interesting that they managed to marry these two worlds, mm. because it is brain versus brawn. There's just a unstoppable meathead who's not even monosyllabic. He's zero syllabic. I don't even know what the term is for zero, but mute? He doesn't. He's mute. He doesn't do anything that he doesn't. He seems always to be there to make his kills, but he doesn't spring traps. He doesn't gleefully relish in the kills, mm-hmm. the way Freddy does. They're completely different beasts. And I thought, like, how are these two going to come together? Because, yeah, Jason is from the school of Haddonfield, Illinois. He's a remorseless killing machine and doesn't have much in the way of personality.
You're equating him to Michael Myers, then, when you say
he is. Yeah. He doesn't have that same... And yet, his personality comes to the fore. Mm-hmm. And because his kill personality, I don't know what it is, but his kills predominate. And some of the best scares are generated by him. And then some of the best lines mm-hmm. are from Freddy. So it's almost like they're marrying their two strengths.
But at the same time, what I thought was cool about this movie, too, was that as the Nightmare series regressed, you know, because, yeah, it started high, and then it went... lower and lower and lower. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I mean, you say that no Friday is transcendent. Yes, I agree with you. It is sort of like some comfort food. I mean, even like, you know, Jason X I could put on and enjoy for, you know, it's a pretty shitty movie, but yeah. I mean, there's some good kills here and there. But the reality of the matter, I think that Friday 13th Part 4, The Final Chapter, was fucking transcendent. I mean, maybe that's because it's one of the first bona fide horror movies I ever saw.
Oh, I love it too, and I love 2, 3, and 4. So they maybe had a stretch mm-hmm. of better films in a row before something went off the rails. Those were dynamite.
But Freddy ended up becoming the Henny Youngman of horror. It was all
about take my wife, please.
And yeah, the kills were becoming more and more outlandish, more and more ridiculous. And this one restrained it. I mean, he still had his one-liners. You know, homaging some early lines, How Sweet Fresh Meat became How Sweet Dark Meat with Kelly Rowland.
Yeah, a little nod to FDR, and the only thing you have to fear is fear itself. So,
But he wasn't quite, I mean, of course, New Nightmare, which was Scream before Scream, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, where Freddy became meta, was grounding the character in reality, and, well, as reality as you could get with a killer that kills in your dreams, that's pure id and whatever, but what I'm trying to say is, when you compare this to, let's say, you know, the cackling, riding the witch's broom, Wizard of Oz homage in Nightmare 4, you're not getting that in this movie. You're getting, you know, this is pretty much the Freddy that we sort of know and love from the earlier Nightmares, and you're getting the Jason that we know and love, and that's the mute, monosyllabic, unstoppable killer. And they're coming together, and they are the, once again, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object.
Yeah.
Who's going to prevail?
Yeah, they work synergistically, I guess. Yeah, I never thought about that, because, the worst excesses of Freddy, much like the Chucky series, too, where it just gets more and more verbose, more and more cackling, mm-hmm. more and more zinger-laden. That was muted here, but, like... kudos to, like, I'm not familiar with Ronnie Yu's other work, but holy crap was the atmosphere set for this. I mean, you talk table settings, but even just atmosphere with the reprise of the 1-2 Freddy's Coming for You song, and there's just the slow motion skipping rope, which just chills me to the bone. And I thought was the neatest scene was the missing children posters, where Laurie walks by them in the police station and they kind of leer at her and they turn in
that
profile. I thought,
cool,
whoa,
yeah.
That was really, really mm-hmm. badass. And yeah, I thought it was amazing. Like, this could have stood as a Freddy movie in its own right in the series had they just snipped the Jason bits out of it. Yeah, because he crafted the world that we've come to know and love from Nightmare on Elm Street. So, I mean... I don't even know why I'm waxing so poetic about this, because I thought this would be utter rubbish.
Well, see, that's
and
what
I'm just shocked. Like, I really enjoyed this, and I watched it like 1.5 times in the span of, like...
I knew, because I, you know, you had not seen this film prior, and you mentioned to me that you purchased it for 50 cents.
I did.
And then it was your idea to podcast this.
Like, it was actually my idea.
And you said, I know I'm going to hate it. I know I'm going to hate it. I'm like, dude, give it a chance. You're going to like it. It's a lot better than what it is. It's a lot better than it has any right to be.
This is definitely true. And what can you say? There's also a lot of grossed out stuff, because you talk about the psychosexual elements and the kills, but there's also little bits of, like, who is it? What's the character, the Destiny's Child character? Kelly Rowland's
Kia.
Yeah. There are several references to her nose, and she's not satisfied with her body. And there's this very surreal scene in a plastic surgeon's office where there's a nurse, and this is a very dreamlike setting, a la Kafka's The Castle or something, and she's looking through a surgery guide of the procedures of how to do different types of plastic surgery, and that was really, really gross. And there's very, very intense, visceral horrors that you don't particularly associate with Jason. You appreciate his kills, but they're not body horror. There's no body horror gross out in Friday movies.
Please excuse us, listeners.
We're pouring some port.
As I refill our glasses, our respective glasses here.
Mm.
Continue.
Oh, no, and again, they're showcasing the kills of Jason, but some of the psychosexual horrific grossness that made Freddy so great, and smashing them together in like this Hadron accelerator of coolness, and
so
just amazing.
Basically, it's a wonderful mashup of the two mythologies done in a way that was a lot better than anyone would have expected. And then, as a cherry on top of the sundae, you then get the fight. You get the climax where Freddy is taking on Jason. And there's two fights. One is in the dream world, where obviously Freddy has the advantage, and one is in the real world, where Jason has the advantage, and both of them get their licks in, and at some points Jason's making Freddy his bitch, and at other points, you know, the tables are turned. But I thought, and the kids are there as well to try, they sort of put
one against the other in a way to try and
interestingly
change the outcome.
It's funny because the protagonist of this, the guy that puts it all together, is Freddy. And he's using Jason as his conduit, and in many ways, Jason, despite the fact that he gets most of the kills in this movie, Freddy only actually kills one person, Jason is rather sympathetic in this movie.
Oh, I never thought of it that way. What, because someone gets the better of him and he's supposed to reign supreme?
But I'm seeing all those flashbacks of the poor kid at Camp Crystal Lake.
Oh, I see, yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff. And, I mean, it's interesting because I tried to use the concept of, Freddy being afraid of fire and Jason being afraid of water,
The Aristotelian elements.
But, that's not really true. I mean, that's the one thing where they sort of kind of played around with the mythology, because, yes, Freddy was born in fire, Jason was born in water, Allah, he drowned, and Freddy was burned to death, but Jason is not afraid of water. I mean,
no, that was a childhood event, and what it has nothing to do with, nor would really Freddy be afraid of fire, right? Because he actually employs heat and hellscapes and fire in his mythology. I mean, a boiler room is nothing if not hell, and it's a place where there's intense, stifling heat, and so he relishes that, and really maybe Jason does as well. Like he prays by the lakeside, and he inhabits a camp.
Movies, certain movies, he was imprisoned at the bottom of a lake. I mean, he's lived in water. Somehow amphibious. He can breathe in water. You know, I can't remember which Friday it was where he was anchored to the bottom of a lake. But even the first Friday, I mean, God knows how long that poor kid, Ari Lehman, who I had the pleasure of hearing, amazing guy. I had a wonderful time with Ari. We hung out quite a bit. But how long Jason was, whether it's a dream sequence or not, how long this kid was underneath the water before he could make his...
Experiencing some anoxia and the lack of oxygen to the brain. Yeah, that was a little absurd.
But ultimately, this was a slasher film that delivered the goods. Great kills. Characters that were not completely just dispensable fodder for the body count. I mean, the acting wasn't that great, but some of the characters were kind of likable.
Yeah, I gotta admit, especially like, yeah, your standard nerds, and the girls were fantastic. One character made me laugh is, again, the victim of the first kill, or no, second kill, my bad, who was closed in a bed. This was Blake and his dad. I was just laughing because there's this moon bat fluoride in the water conspiracy nutcase on the radio named Alex Jones, and his dad looked like Alex Jones to the point where I was questioning, is that guy? But yeah, the characters are great. The cops are fantastic.
Oh, I love the stoner who at the aftermath of
the stoner. Oh, we got to talk about that, because he's trying to put everything together, and he experiences a fantastic vision of Freddy slipping under the door and morphing into this quasi-worm snake. It doesn't matter what the mythology is. They're both born of the same thing. It's the embodiment of Satan. And that creature, let's call it a worm, blows weed, puffs marijuana smoke in the stoner's face before offing him. That was a terrific scene that could have been handled poorly, but was handled really cool. With great effects, too.
Yeah, and I love the line after the rave massacre, where he goes, man, that goalie was pissed. I mean, the guy's still...
What
the hell's going on?
Yeah, because they could have employed the post-scream conceit of saying, oh, yeah, like making something meta and self-referential, but they refer to him as a goalie. They didn't know he was Jason, which is just perfect. They couldn't have done that any other way.
The kids of Elm Street didn't know about
Never the Twain Shall Meet.
Never the Twain Shall Meet, which is, again, maybe a little bit far-fetched, because you would think, you have these two prolific killers, and there would be some sort of media, but what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
There was enough coolness in this movie, and there was enough entertainment value that it, I've seen it at least four times, and
nice.
It never feels so small on my face. I really, really like it. And I kind of am glad you like it too.
Yeah.
I had a feeling you would. So is this the time when we sort of segue into
Sure. Well, there's wonderful little details, because I can't speak for the Friday series as much, but the devil maybe literally here is in the details with the little tiny mentions and allusions to Freddy. There's a news channel called KRGR-TV. And this is the channel reporting on the carnage in Springwood. And this is, of course, Krueger, as if it were spelled out on a license plate. And I thought, what a neat little thing. It flashes by for all of a second or two, and you have to really pay attention to notice it. I thought that was terrific. There's the monster, you can't speak its name, a la Macbeth, the Scottish play. People were saying, don't say his name. The town is...
Or Voldemort.
Yeah, and they don't want to bring up that name, because it's a common horror trope where, Jesus, it's not that guy again. We thought we were done with that guy. And, that guy's back again. So, guess who's back? Back again. Mm-hmm. Freddy's back. Call a friend. Yeah, to quote Eminem here, but yeah, neat stuff also with the Weston Hills Psychiatric Institute. I love that people are in prison against their will, and the one guy has to break free, does so by acting especially crazy. I love the institutionalization parts of Nightmare that they brought into this. What did you learn?
Well, I mean, this is not something I learned, this is something I know. I mean, this is Kane Hodder's least favorite movie. To this day, he will not stop railing against Freddy vs. Jason,
because
he felt that he owned the role of Jason, because he, just by virtue of the fact that, there was so many different stuntmen that played Jason in the various films, and when Kane Hodder started playing him, just by virtue of the fact that he played him in more than one or two movies, he felt it was his role. And when he was recast by an actor by the name of Ken Kurzinger, he was not a happy man. They wanted optics. They wanted a taller Jason. So Kurzinger is 6'5", and Hodder is 6'2". To this day, I mean, I'll probably be seeing Kane at this year's Shock Stop. Well, I will be seeing him, and I don't know. I'm not that happy with Kane Hodder due to an earlier encounter I had with him. So I don't want to get into it. But I'm gonna kneel him a bit. I'm gonna ask him about what his thoughts are on Freddy versus Jason.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that too.
Throw all the shit out of me, because what he's known to do to his fans. But that's okay. That's one thing. Kane Hodder, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. He's not listening. Anyway, the other thing is that near the end of the movie, and I don't want to spoil much, but one of the kids grabs hold of Jason's machete, uses it, and then tosses it into the river. What the fuck, man?
Yeah, yeah.
I would have kept that machete. That's Jason's fucking machete.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Forget about the fact is it's, you know, an amazing piece of horror memorabilia, but I mean, this that's meta. Yeah. Man, you could have got a shitload of that on eBay for, you know.
Well, this is true.
So, excuse me.
For but it's gonna rise like Excalibur from the lake, and it'll be used again. So, but well, maybe he should have taken it and melted it down, like, you know, for that whatever steel it's made of, and so no one could ever use it again.
No, I just saw her throw the thing in the ocean, going, no, that would look so cool on my shelf next to all my other horror memorabilia.
This is true.
Anyway, yeah, no, it was. Yeah. And what else did I learn? I learned that. This movie, you know, it did very well at the box office. It revitalized two dormant franchises. After that, there was a lot of speculation as to what's going to come next. Is it going to be... There was talk of Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, bringing in Bruce Campbell.
That
there was
can't talk go of
bringing in Michael Myers. There was talk of bringing in every horror icon, you know, Pinhead, what have you. Again, nothing came of it. Although there was, I believe, Freddy versus Jason versus Ash comic series that continued the story after that. But I really like this movie, and if I sort of segue now to my star rating, I'm going to give it, I can't really say 4 stars, but a solid 3 3/4.
Yeah, okay, 3.5 for me, just solid, maybe 3 3 1/4, just incredible. Just by virtue of the title alone, if you're just to look at the title, and with the misgivings you might have had, then I would give it 4, if you have such antipathy toward these kinds of things. If not, if you're more open, I'm not so much, then yeah, I revert to my other rating, but definitely well worth your time. What's also worth your time, our fantastic website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and of course, send us your suggestions on movies we should podcast, reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and check out our new episodes every Friday, and we'll definitely talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.